The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
Good morning. Welcome to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. Also listening to us on 88.1 WSBR in Lee, Lenox, and Stockbridge. Watching us on the PCTV Select app, which is free to download at our website, pittsfieldtv.org. And also watching us on cable channel 1301 on Access Pittsfield. Thanks for joining us this morning. It's great to have you with us. It's Friday, August 14th, and it's just in about 56, 58 degrees outside, somewhere in that range, depending on which thermostat you look at. Kind of a nice day. I hear we're going to have a little stretch of nice summer weather here coming up. So looking forward to that in the middle of August. We've got a great show coming up for you this morning as well. We have folks from the Elizabeth Freeman Center. We have Divya Chaturvedi. She's executive director of the center. And Leslie Iafredo, she is the board president. We're going to learn all about the Elizabeth Freeman Center, some of the history of the organization, the services that they provide, and some of the special events that they've got coming up. Talk about Rise. You might see the lawn signs occasionally as you're driving through Pittsfield and Berkshire County. You want to know more about that? You're going to learn about that this morning from the Elizabeth Freeman Center. So more on that in just a moment. First, let's get to the weather forecast and see what we have in store for us today from the National Weather Service. Berkshire
Weather. WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Rest of tonight, mostly clear. Near steady temperature in the upper 50s. Northwest wind around 5 miles per hour. Friday, sunny. Highs in the upper 70s. Northwest wind around 5 miles per hour. Friday night, mostly clear. A chance of showers in the evening. Patchy fog after midnight. Lows in the lower 50s. North wind around 5 miles per hour. Chance of rain 30%. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
Yeah, I hear a nice day coming today and a nice night. Also, kind of a mirror image of that tomorrow. And then sounds like Sunday we were going to be getting maybe a chance of showers in the afternoon and evening, but nothing to really be too concerned about. And then another nice stretch of weather early next week. That's what I was hearing this morning from the extended forecast. So really nice to hear that when we've had kind of a lot of up and downs this year, a lot of hot streaks and a lot of heavy rain and weather. We kind of dodged a lot of that, but it's nice to have some weather that just is nice, where you can go out and enjoy the outside and not have to worry about dodging the weather. All right. Morning Drive, Sean Sayre here with you this morning again. It's Friday, August 14th. Welcome to Friday. And we do have folks from the Elizabeth Freeman Center this morning with one person joining us in just a moment. But first, I'd like to introduce Leslie Iafredo. Leslie is the board president of the organization. Good morning, Leslie, and thanks for taking the first part of the program here for us.
Good morning. Oh. Thank you for having me.
Oh, absolutely. Glad to have you here. And your executive director, Divya Chaturvedi, she'll be joining us in just a moment. That's the way live radio works sometimes. This is a very early program, so it can be tricky to get everybody here and get them all in the right time and everything. So I do appreciate you coming and being our first first victim here on the radio this morning. You're a board president of the Elizabeth Freeman Center. First of all, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got to be on the board of directors of the organization, what interested you in the organization, and kind of some of the things you're passionate about.
Yeah, thank you. I've been on the board for 4 years now. I actually was introduced to the organization when I attended a Rise Together walk. Back in 2021. I grew up in Pittsfield, but I was away for about 30 years. Mm-hmm. And I came back and was looking for something to do. So I was the Rise Walk sort of piqued my curiosity. Mm-hmm. So I went to a walk and was blown away. I didn't realize that domestic and sexual violence was a problem in Berkshire County. I was quite impressed with the Elizabeth Freeman Center. I thought these are the coolest people fighting for, you know, populations that need services, and all that they're providing is really life-changing. So I attended a few more walks that fall, and they invited me onto the fundraising committee for a year and eventually onto the board.
So that's, I can see where that would definitely draw you in. It's really important to have people who are on the board of directors, governing an organization, essentially, who have those connections to the organization that sort of had that, you know, introduction to it, right? To say, okay, I'm here, ready to help, and this is what I'm interested in. So tell us a little bit about the organization, if you will. It looks like our Divya is just joining us now. You can come right in. Gotta love radio. Divya Chaturvedi, and you are the executive director of the Elizabeth Freeman Center. Good morning, and thanks for joining us here this morning.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great. I was just talking with Leslie. She was just introducing herself and talking about what got her interested in being involved in the organization. Actually, Leslie, go ahead and give us a little bit of an overview of the organization. You mentioned that it's a support organization for sexual violence. There's a lot of other programs that are run, and I know we're going to talk to Divya about that in just a moment. Give us a little bit of an overview on your side.
Yeah, so we're the only domestic and sexual violence support agency in Berkshire County. We have been around for 50 years. We began in the 1970s. Two organizations were started, the Women's Services Center, that focused on helping survivors of domestic violence, and Rape Crisis Center, that helped sexual assault victims. And they worked side by side through the years, providing very important services. And the two merged in 1997 to become the Elizabeth Freeman Center.
Okay.
And at that point, we really built our programs and focused in on, you know, many different ways that we could help survivors. We have three offices in Berkshire County, one in Pittsfield, North Adams, and Great Barrington. And we have the only shelter in an undisclosed location in all of Western Massachusetts.
So those are all really important things. And, you know, I guess the first thing I think of is it flies under the radar a little bit, right? That people don't know that that exists, that those services are available. But if someone is in need of those services, immediately you're able to jump in and help, right?
That's right.
And Divya, why don't you give us a little bit of overview about yourself? I understand you've been the executive director for about 2 years. What drew you to be part of this organization? And give us a little bit of background on yourself.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure. So my background is nonprofit management and international development. And from the beginning, I have been drawn to serving women and underserved communities in various, you know, various aspects of my career. Before joining Elizabeth Freeman Center, I was running another domestic violence agency in Greater Boston area that served immigrant survivors of domestic violence. And, you know, we worked with Elizabeth Freeman Center, you know, on and off as we had clients in Boston area who were living in the Berkshires. And we needed services for them. So I knew of the agency. I knew of the great work the agency was doing. So it was truly an honor to be able to lead this agency and join it 2 years 2 years back. And it's hard to believe it's already been 2 years.
It does fly by fast, doesn't
really?
It?
Yes. Yeah.
So give us a little overview then of the organization of all the different programs that you provide. And I think Leslie did give us a little taste of that. But there, it sounds like there's a great depth to the kinds of services that you do offer the community. We want to be able to bring those out front if people aren't paying attention. Let's hear about it.
Oh, absolutely. Our first, you know, I do want to say before I go into services that there is still a stigma around domestic violence. Mm. And it takes a lot of courage for someone to leave a relationship that is abusive.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the national statistic is that it takes 7 to 11 tries before you truly leave an abusive relationship.
7 to 11 tries.
Yeah. And it is...
So it's not a flip of the moment, I think I'm not being treated well, I've got to leave, right? And it's, you might know that, but at the same time, it's not going to happen quickly and overnight. And what are some of the reasons why?
So domestic violence is about power and control. So it's a pattern of behavior that repeats over and over, and it's about exerting power over another individual.
Mm.
When you are in an intimate partner relationship, you know, you don't go into it thinking of leaving, right? I mean, you're making it work. You love this this person.
Sure.
And you go through cycles of abuse. When there's an abuse, there's a trigger, you know, something happens, and then there is apology, and, you know, it'll get better. And you always hope that you can make things work.
Mm.
But because it is a pattern of behavior, it doesn't truly go away. And it just, you know, it escalates many times. So it starts off, you know, maybe with verbal disagreements, and it can escalate to strangulation and really, you know, threats on someone's life. Or it can just start with that. You know, there are various ways domestic violence manifests in a relationship. We have survivors who are in an abusive relationship trying to figure out what are the next steps. They come to us for services. And then we have survivors who are literally fleeing imminent danger. There's threat on their life and threat on the life of their children. And for us, that moves us into, you know, it's almost like being on a 911 call, right? It's an emergency, it's a crisis. And we swing into action, we make sure that, you know, we are doing everything we can to make that person safe. If that means that we have to provide them emergency shelter, or in this county or outside, if it's available, getting them a restraining order, going to the police. If they've been sexually assaulted, then we also have physical response that will meet them at the hospital as they go through the, you know, the sexual assault nurse exam, which is what we call it, the SANE exam.
Mm-hmm.
So our immediate priority and goal is to make that person safe, you know, because that determines every other step afterwards. Once we have done that, you know, and we, like, are many, it's not just one advocate. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, we have multiple staff in various ways working with that person. Our legal advocates, you know, would work with them in the courts. Our police advocate would be the point of contact between the police. Our hotline staff is dealing, you know, what they need. Our staff is finding a shelter for them. It takes a long time. Once that is done, then we move into the next step. What are the next steps? Do they have a job? You know, they have a safe place to go back. What are they doing with their kids? If they move into a shelter, they are rebuilding their life, right, from scratch.
Right.
They have had to leave their ecosystem behind, their friends and family, their childcare, their job, their car. Sometimes they come with just clothes on their back.
It's overwhelming.
It is.
Right?
It is overwhelming.
When you start to think about all of that, no wonder it takes, would you say, 7 to 11 tries, because all those complications figure in, and you say, is this really worth me doing all that? And then you get to that point and you say, yes, I have to. And then that's like the next frontier, right? You've crossed that Rubicon.
And that's why it takes so much courage. But at the end of the day, you know, the reason they have the courage is because you don't want to live a life of abuse, and you don't want your children to grow up, you know, in an abusive household.
Right. It's a very courageous decision, actually.
It is.
Because
it is.
You, I would imagine, had, you know, imagined your life being a certain way and it's going south. Things are not going the way that you wanted them to, and you have those decisions, especially when children are involved. That's not the only scenario, it sounds like.
No,
but it's a significant one.
There are many different ways and different, you know, every survivor is an individual. And I do want to say that what our services are free, confidential, and non-judgmental. Mm-hmm. We work with you where you are. You may not be ready to go to a shelter today. You may not be ready to take this action today. Our goal is to support you in your decision-making. So many times when you are in an abusive relationship, your decision-making ability is taken away from you. Mm-hmm. We have survivors who've never, you know, who can't make a decision on their own, who don't manage their finances. They don't know how to, you know, many times. And what we do is we help them, empower them, and support them. So, and we go with the decision-making that they are doing, you know, what they want in that moment. And and we don't judge them in any way. We don't have a cookie cutter approach. Mm-hmm. Every survivor, every individual has an individual need, and that's what we try to do, which is what makes this work very complicated, but it's also very individualized. And I just want to say that once the crisis, it's always going to be a little bit of a crisis, but when the immediate, you know, the safety is established for the survivor, that's when we roll out our other services, and which means that they can meet with a counselor advocate to kind of unpack their trauma, have a safe space to process what is happening to them. If the children have experienced domestic violence, we have counselor advocates who will meet with the kids. And if the kids are showing significant need, we partner with the kids' place and we'll do a referral to their clinicians at the kids' place. If they're immigrants, we're working with Berkshire Immigrant Center. You know, do they need a work authorization? If they need a job, if they don't have a job, we offer them our money school program, which helps them with financial literacy and gives them the confidence to kind of take the next step, you know, go back to school or get a new job or even ask for that promotion that they didn't think that they deserve, right? So there are various, you know.
And I want to talk more about the financial end of it maybe in the second half of the show also, because there's a lot to explore there. And I think because you had mentioned that this is about control, right, that some of these issues come up because there is a person trying to and attempting to control another person. It could be through sexual violence, could be through other means. Financial control is one of those things as well. So I do want to talk about what the solutions are there once the crisis portion of it, as you had mentioned, sort of is on the wane, then how do you go about the rebuild, right? That seems to be the next section. There's like the first section of taking care of what is immediately necessary. And then the second part is, okay, let's get you back on track. Let's get your life started again. Am I hitting that right?
So, when we say every survivor deserves safety and stability, that's what it is. So our immediate priority is safety. And we move into stability. How do we stabilize this person so that they can take care of themselves and their family?
If you're just joining us, we're speaking with folks from the Elizabeth Freeman Center this morning, Adivya Chaturvedi. I hope I got that name right.
You did.
She's the executive director, and Leslie Iofredo. She is the board president of the organization. Really important stuff that we're talking about here. So let's chat a little bit about RISE. Because Leslie, you mentioned in the beginning, right when you were here, that that was an event that kind of drew you in to participating with the organization. Tell us about RISE. Everybody has seen the lawn signs when they come out every year, and a lot of people have participated in the walks. So tell us about that event, why it's important, and what it does for the organization.
Yeah, so RISE Together is my favorite event that we put on at the Elizabeth Freeman Center, and we like to call it our biggest friendraiser and our biggest fundraiser. And it's basically a series of walks that we do around Berkshire County each September, and we want to bring the community together to spread awareness about our services, but also raise money so that we can continue to provide the services. This year, we're holding three walks. The first one is in Pittsfield on Tuesday, September 15th at 5:30.
It's only about a month away, which it's good timing
fast
that you're here now. Yes.
Yep. The next one is in Lenox, Thursday, September 24th at 5:30. and North Adams on Thursday, October 1st at 5:30. And at each walk, we gather. We usually have music leading up to when we start at 5:30. We have inspirational speeches. We usually walk about a mile. And then this year we're starting having after parties. So in Pittsfield, we'll end the walk at Persa Park, and then we'll head over to Hot Plate Brewing, where Flavors will provide some food for us.
Ah, nice.
Yeah. Lennox, we will end at the community center, where we'll have community dinner of hamburgers and hot dogs. And in North Adams, we will end at Hotel Down Street, where we'll have a reception. So we're trying to really make each walk special. Yeah.
And tell us how you want listeners to be able to participate in these walks. What is it you want from them? Because I remember this kind of grew out of the original Walk a Mile event. And so people can imagine that in their minds. But what makes the walk important, and how can people participate and also be able to donate and make this a fundraiser and a friendraiser the way you described it?
Yeah, so I'm glad you mentioned Walk a Mile, because so many people are familiar with that. Yeah. And that used to take place in Pittsfield. Mm-hmm. There used to be one event. And in the early 2020s, we changed to Rise Together. Mm-hmm. And we started to spread out across the county so that we could reach more communities. Mm-hmm. And we use the fundraising platform called One Cause. And so people can go to our website, ElizabethFreemanCenter.org, mm-hmm. and there's an icon that will bring them to our One Cause platform. And that's a fundraising platform where they can register to attend a walk, or they can sign up to raise money for us, start a team. Mm-hmm. It's very simple.
A little easier than the Josh Billings, too.
Much easier.
I'm thinking, right?
And it's really, the site is very interactive and fun. So you can sign up to start a page. You can share that link with your friends. Watch your donations going up. There's a little bit of competition that happens.
Right.
And there's a lot of information on the site about our services, about the impact that your donations will have. Am I leaving anything out?
Do you have some notable participants, people that come every year and that would be easily recognizable by the community? Is that part of what draws people in as well?
So Rise is truly a community event. Mm. You know, I joined EFC, and my second day was the Pittsfield Rise. And it was really like seeing the community in action. And it was so inspiring to me to see everyone come together. The reason the community comes together is because, you know, as we say, everyone knows someone. Mm-hmm. You know someone who's been affected by domestic violence, right? It's the scale is really sad.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you
know someone, but you didn't know, right? I guess that's the other thing. And you had mentioned, you know, the stigma at the beginning, and I think that's still important. And that's why when we talk about it openly and have a radio show about it, for example, it becomes less of a stigma. People can openly discuss that it is an issue. You can't just tuck it away and say, well, it doesn't really happen in my community. We can discuss it and we can find solutions. And that's what the Elizabeth Freeman Center sounds like is all about.
Thank you for saying that, because domestic violence doesn't discriminate. Mm. It can happen to anyone, anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And what makes it special, Arise, what makes it special is that it is for the whole community. It is for men, women, children, your pets, mm-hmm. anyone and everyone can join our work. It sends a message to the community and to survivors that they are supported, mm-hmm. they are believed, and that, you know, that we will stand with you. As you go through this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really important message to send to survivors and to the community, because you feel so alone.
Mm-hmm.
And for folks that are not seeking services or don't know where to go, you know, they feel even more isolated and alone. And, mm-hmm. This is our way, EFC's way, of reaching to everyone in the community and saying, hey, you're not alone. And we are there to provide services, but we also have this community this amazing community that will show up and inspire others. And we want really everyone to join our walk. We do have our one cause where you register for our walks, but you can show up. You know, if you haven't registered, doesn't matter. You know, as long as you show up for our walk and show your support. We also want to invite men into our walks. You know, your partners, your brothers, your husbands, your friends. Because only when we work together can we really solve for this. Because you said, you know, it's a huge problem. And, you know, we are providing services, but on the back end, how do we have this not happen? You know, how do we educate the community? How do we talk about healthy relationships? You know, how do we bring people into this conversation? And that's also a huge goal of our Rise Together walk.
Yeah, I would imagine, and I think that was the idea originally of a walk a mile, was that you saw some of the men coming out and they were showing their support, right? And bringing that clear visibility to the event and to the organization of saying, hey, we stand with you, we walk with you, right? And that must be what you've carried through with these events going forward. Is that right?
Yes. Unfortunately, I was not here for the walk a mile, but I tell you, from the first day of me coming to the Berkshires, people have spoken about it very, very fondly. Everywhere I go, people remember it. It was really a big event, it seems. And Rise Together has morphed into more, you know, more inclusive event. We do it in South County, in North County, in Pittsfield. So we give an opportunity for everyone to join our walks. You know, transportation is a little bit of a challenge in this county. So, you know, this is our way of really. So this is our way of really inviting everyone to join EFC and show their support to survivors.
Is it important to get sponsors support for this particular event and others? But talk about that a little bit. And if there are companies or individuals that would like to sponsor this event, how would they go about that?
Oh, absolutely. Sponsors are really important part of our fundraising. There have been sponsors that have supported us for a really long time. You know, we have our Greylock and our Beacon Bank, Adams Bank, Lee Bank. So many of these banks, you know, they support the community, community efforts. I'll invite Leslie. Leslie is the powerhouse behind our Rise, our Rise walk.
So many organizations have supported us. Onyx Papers is a really good example.
Great.
So companies from around the county. Last year we had 32 sponsors. We're hoping to get many of them back this year. Again, you could go, if anyone wants to sponsor, they can go to our website, click on the...
And the website again is...
ElizabethFreemanCenter.org. Okay. Click on the Rise icon, and that'll bring them to one cause, and there's a pull-down for sponsor application.
Great. And it's not too late to do that, even though the Rise Together walks are happening in September. I'm sure that there's still plenty of time to get that in.
Plenty of time, right. So please go to our website and do that if you haven't already gotten a phone call from us.
And by the way, if you're just tuning in, we've got a couple minutes before our break. This is Morning Drive on 89.7 WTBR FM. Folks from the Elizabeth Freeman Center are here, Divya Chaturvedi and Leslie Iafredo. Just tell us, how do you interface with, let's say, law enforcement, with social services organizations? I would imagine that you have to have very, very close ties with those organizations. They're probably reaching out to you when something happens and they know that, this person is in need of services. This person is going to need to talk to somebody there. What are those ties like with those organizations for you?
I'm glad you asked. And before I answer that, I want to say that the Berkshire community is truly amazing in terms of collaboration. Mm. There's such a high level of collaboration.
I think we're known for that.
and I'm seeing it firsthand, living here now and working here now. We do collaborate with the police departments. We have a civil and police advocacy program where we have a civil and police advocate who's the bridge between the police department and the survivor. Mm. And we have relationship with Pittsfield Police, for such a long number of years. Mm-hmm. We work with Adams Police Department, North Adams Police Department, and they will routinely reach out. Sometimes they will have someone who's in the police station at 9 o'clock in the night, and they'll call us, and we'll have a physical response person reach out. And assess the needs of the survivor and
what
they
need. Because
it
doesn't go by office hours, right? This is 24/7.
It's 24/7. Yeah. Once, we have hotline, it's 24/7. We have physical response staff that'll meet survivors in the hospital or police stations, when they're seeking services. Sometimes they are, kicked off their homes and they have nowhere to go and they're brought to a police station. So we get a call from them. And it's amazing that we can swing into action and help someone in that moment, especially where in a county where transportation is a challenge. You can't just get a motel at drop of a hat or go somewhere and be safe.
Yeah.
So it makes a difference, really difference between safety and danger.
Great.
We also collaborate with a host of other agencies in the Berkshires. I said a few moments ago, when someone is rebuilding a life, the scale of need is vast, and no one organization can truly, support that. So it takes a lot of us, it takes a village, it takes all of Berkshire County to truly support a survivor for the path to stability.
Well said. And folks from the Elizabeth Freeman Center, my guests here this morning on Morning Drive, Divya and Leslie, will come back after this short break and talk more. Definitely want to talk about something called Money School and some of the other financial help that you have with regards to that. I want to talk about funding and support on that other end, how all this is possible, because it doesn't just happen, right? Funding's got to come from somewhere. So I want to talk about all those things in the second half of the show. But let's do this break, and we'll be right back after this on Morning Drive on 89.7 WTBR-FM Pittsfield Community Radio. Stick around.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR-FM.
This is Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 WTBR-FM Pittsfield, 88.1 WSBR Lee.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. Free community college for any Massachusetts resident without a bachelor's degree at BCC. Find out more at berkshirecc.edu.
And from Sandrini Awnings and Home Improvement, providing awnings and canopies in Western Massachusetts. Retractable awnings, retractable screen, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings and screen rooms. Customized solutions available online at sandrini.com.
PCTV Select is a great way to watch local content without having a cable subscription. You can keep up with the latest of what's going on in your community from anywhere in the world. And it's available for free right now. Watch live events in full HD on your TV, on your computer, or on the go with your mobile device. Or watch our large library of on-demand video programs anytime that's convenient for you. No more waiting until it's on TV. Did we mention it's free? PCTV Select is everywhere you need to be.
We are Rotary, people of action. And we add our support to great ideas to make real change happen. Whether supporting the local warm coat drive, fighting hunger with our local food pantries, or making more transformational gifts like the splash pad at Clapp Park, Pittsfield Rotary is having fun and raising funds to change lives. Join us at our weekly lunches and get involved. Take action with us. Visit RotaryPittsfield.org for more information.
Support for this public service announcement comes from Berkshire Community College and Park Square Productions.
Welcome to Beyond, a one-hour program of science fiction, fantasy, and adventure. I'll be your host, Beverly Prentice. Listen in every Saturday morning at 8 a.m. My email is beyond3x5@gmail.com.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs to help our community thrive. Greylock Federal, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org. And from UCP of Western Massachusetts, the Northern Berkshire Early Intervention Program is now accepting applications for an occupational therapist to support child development, empower families, and change futures. 2026 graduates welcome to apply. Apply today at ucpwma.org.
You have chosen wisely.
WTBR.
And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
All right, welcome back to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. Sean Sayre here with you this morning on a Friday, the 14th of August, just about 58 degrees outside this morning, and a nice summer day coming up, the nice weekend as well, with maybe a few showers there on Sunday afternoon and into the evening. We'll do the full weather forecast here in just a minute, and then we'll get back to our conversation with the folks from the Elizabeth Freeman Center. So stick around, we'll do the weather here, and we'll be right back to that. Here we go.
Berkshire Weather.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Rest of tonight, mostly clear. Near steady temperature in the upper 50s. Northwest wind around 5 miles per hour. Friday, sunny. Highs in the upper 70s. Northwest wind around 5 miles per hour. Friday night, mostly clear. A chance of showers in the evening. Patchy fog after midnight. Lows in the lower 50s. North wind around 5 miles per hour. Chance of rain 30%. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
Okay, and I was hearing that we are going to have a nice couple of days, a stretch of good weather here in mid-August for our summer. Nothing too hot or too rainy, which is nice. Maybe a little bit of rain would be okay. And then a nice stretch early next week as well. I'm not also hearing about a huge amount of humidity, which also makes it a little bit more tolerable. You know, it doesn't matter how hot it gets. If it's just sticking to you, it's no fun at all. All right, Morning Drive returns here with the Elizabeth Freeman Center this morning, and we're live here in our studio. Good morning again, Divya Chaturvedi and Leslie Iofredo. Thanks again for joining me here to talk about this really important subject and this important organization of yours.
Thank you for inviting us. It's a pleasure to be here.
Sure. Again. So let's chat a little bit about sort of the one of the most important services you have, which is you have a hotline, right? And this is where someone will know, and you're going to tell us what that hotline number is, I hope, and tell us what that does and take us step by step through how that process would work when someone is in crisis, when someone is in need. They pick up the phone, they dial the hotline number. Go ahead.
Absolutely. So we are, as Leslie said, we are the only domestic violence and sexual assault agency in the Berkshires, and we provide 24/7 services. So our hotline, which is 100% free, and it's 100% confidential, and I will just say the number, it's 866-401-2425.
And let's say that again for the radio audience.
Yes, it's 866-401-2425. And, you know, so when someone's in a crisis or there's a sexual assault, they can call a hotline. It is answered by an advocate, a trained advocate who will talk to them, understand their needs, and then connect them to services. So, for example, if you know, we get sexual assault, a call from the hospital or from the client, from the survivor themselves, you know, that call will be answered by an advocate who will talk to them, kind of try and calm them down, you know, let them know what the next steps are. Mm-hmm. We'll reach out to our physical response staff, and they will go and meet the survivor in the hospital and be with them. And explain our services and see if they want more services. But we be with them in the moment, mm-hmm. you know, as they go through their sexual assault nurse exam, and or if they're in the police station, you know, they've been kicked out of the home and they have nowhere to go in the police station. They've been, you know, there's threat on their life. So our services, you know, our crisis intervention services kind of swing into action 24/7 when someone calls a hotline. During the day, we have staff, you know, 9 to 5, we have staff in the office, and, you know, so various people will work. But that's true even for after hours, you know, we physical response person. But then if they need an, you know, emergency, you know, shelter, someone is working even after hours to get them that.
So I would imagine every one of those calls to the hotline is going to be a little unique, a little different, right? That there are probably some commonalities to it, but it could be that something has just happened and they need immediate assistance, like you had mentioned. Is there a possibility also that someone is called after multiple events have happened and they've just had enough and they said, I finally need to call and find out what I can do. What are some of the possibilities there?
So we usually see when someone is in a crisis after hours, we usually see hotline calls, you know, coming through. But they're also, you know, when, for example, you know, you've got services, you are kind of stable, but you have PTSD and trauma. And sometimes there's a trigger and they don't know how to process that. And they will call a hotline and they will, you know, talk to the advocate who will kind of calm them down. The purpose of the hotline is crisis intervention. It's like someone is in a crisis. We try and keep our lines open. It's like 911. You know, you call, you know, we figure out what is happening. We swing into action and we provide you the help. If they need counseling, for example, they're going through an episode and they really need someone to talk to, you know, we will come, you know, we will help them through that, but then set up an appointment for the next day to for them to meet with a counselor advocate in our offices so that they can get the help that they need. Or a counselor will call them the next day and see how they are doing and what other services they need. So it's kind of, you know, it's a very dynamic process, as you know, when you're dealing with crisis. And as you said, each call is very different. And you know, people needing different things, but it's truly like a crisis intervention, you know, after hours with physical response and our advocates there, and it's all confidential. Being a small community where people know everyone, we take that really seriously.
That can probably be one of the most difficult things, right? Like if you're in Boston or Springfield or Worcester or some other larger city, people are more anonymous. And when you get to Pittsfield or North Adams and Great Barrington, as you said, Divya, everybody knows everybody. And it's really hard to keep that information confidential. But that would be, I would think, one of the most crucial parts of this is that confidential information of knowing that you can confide and know that that information stays where it needs to stay.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. We take that really, really seriously.
Yeah. Let's move on. And we should probably mention that hotline number one more time since we just finished talking about it. Go ahead and give that again.
It's 866-401-2425.
And if you can't remember the number, you can certainly find that hotline number on the website, right? And that website is?
It's ElizabethFreemanCenter.org.
Right. Okay. So very important stuff. And let's move on to what I had sort of teased in the first part of the program, which was the financial stuff. And there's something that you have called Money School. Tell us what that is and what you hope to accomplish and achieve and serve people with that program.
Oh, I love talking about Money School. It's one of our most positive programs, and it really provides the hope to a lot of advocates as, you know, as they do their work. So Money School will be 10 years old this year.
Wow.
It is an amazing program that was created for survivors. So there are, you know, there are a lot of financial literacy programs out there in the communities, right? But this one is created specifically for survivors because it takes into account the trauma that survivors still hold and carry. And it takes into account that financial abuse goes hand in hand with domestic violence. 99% of domestic violence cases will also include financial abuse. It's when you can't open your own bank account. It's when you have to give whatever you want to your, you know, to your abuser. You don't know how to manage money. You don't know your bank accounts. You don't know passcode. You don't have online, you know, you can't make any financial decision on your own. You can't buy a car on your own, you know, things like that, right? It saps the confidence of the survivor to manage their finances.
Right.
And it becomes, you know, it's overwhelming. And now you're on your own and you have to live your life and it can be really overwhelming. And so Money School recognizes that trauma and the need and is set up to serve survivors. So it's financial literacy, but it's in a trauma-informed way, taking into account the experiences of the survivor.
So what are some of the specific things that someone might learn in Money School? You know, again, you mentioned that they may not have opened a bank account of their own or manage a credit card or, you know, reconcile a balance and things like that. Those are all important things to feel like you have control over that part of your life, right? The financial part. It shouldn't be like, you know, taking over what you're thinking of your life, but it's a very important part of it.
Absolutely. And they learn all of that and more. Managing your budget, you know, credit, how to repair your credit, credit cards. Money School has financial coaches that will work one-on-one with, the cohort that is doing the Money School and help them with, questions they have, help them with, these issues in how to repair your credit or to get a credit card, how to get, loan and things like that. Mm-hmm.
And to know also probably that those things are not quick or easy, right? When you think about repairing credit, that's not something where you just push a button and you say, okay, great, I fixed my credit. It's a long-term process and it takes some dedication and some skill, which probably has to be, imparted somehow.
Absolutely. And it takes information and knowledge too, and the confidence that someone has your back, you can reach out to them. And that is, again, back to the amazing community that is here. Our financial coaches, the reason Money School is successful, because people keep coming back and volunteering as financial coaches. Hmm. We partner with over 30 organizations in the Berkshires. People want to come and be part of this, want to help survivors. We invite, partner agencies and other agencies to talk about how to get a job, go back to school. So it's a wraparound kind of program, giving them all kinds of information with an accountability measure of having a financial coach and the relationships that are there in this community. They come back to us even after once they've done the classes and the series. If they want a loan, they'll reach out to us and we can connect them to someone who's already worked with them. Mm-hmm. And it just makes it easier, for them to talk to that person, figure out what they need.
Because if you've never done that stuff, it can be very scary.
It can be. It can be. And that's where this community comes together. That's where EFC comes together in creating this service for them, this program that's specifically for survivors. Mm.
We're speaking with folks from the Elizabeth Freeman Center here this morning on Morning Drive. If you're just joining us, the voices of Divya Chaturvedi and Leslie Iafredo. And Leslie is the board president. Divya is the executive director of the organization. And that's such a great program to hear about and to know that those are kind of, again, as we talked about in the beginning of the program, the services you provide sort of after the crisis has abated maybe a little bit. It's probably never gone away completely, but the idea is you sort of backfill that with some skills and some information and some support and some help.
And I do want to say that we also offer a Money School in Spanish for our Spanish-speaking survivors. So we offer sessions in English and in Spanish as well.
How important is it to provide services for sort of the marginalized community here in Berkshire County? And we know that there are some very needy communities, second language communities, LGBTQ. Tell us about serving those particular populations and what makes that either more difficult, challenging, or important.
I'm so glad you asked that. We have been very intentional in providing services to communities and having advocates with lived experiences who can provide these services. And going back to, we are the only agency and we have to, we have to make sure that anyone who reaches out to us can get services. So we have specialized programming for LGBTQ survivors. We have, what we call the Safety and Justice for Immigrants program, which is for our immigrants and for our survivors, non-English English-speaking survivors. We have programs for children who witnessed domestic violence, and we're also intentional of serving disabled survivors. We have a disability justice program where we have these are specialized counselors who are trained to work with survivors from these communities.
Is the elder community also factored into that? Or is there elder abuse that you work with?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I mean, it happens, and it's really sad when you get someone who's over 70 or sometimes over 80 years old, seeking services. We never say no. We will work with you, determine what your need is, and if we can't provide you services in that moment, we will try and connect you, you know, send referrals and connect you to other agencies.
Leslie, let's talk about the support and the funding side of this, because obviously having a great supportive board of directors is important for any organization. I would imagine it's critical for this organization because the funding needs, all the things that you've just described, Divya, have a real cost. Having people available as counselors and, you know, everything that you do. So how does the organization do that, Leslie?
Well, Divya can probably speak to that better than I can, but I can tell you that
because you started on a fundraising committee.
Yeah, the board of directors has a fundraising committee, and this year we had a gala to celebrate our 50th anniversary. That was highly successful, and also we'll be holding our Rise Together walks in September, which is also a big fundraiser.
Right. And give us the dates of those, because people just tuning in maybe didn't hear that the first time. The first one is in Pittsfield,
Pittsfield walk will be Tuesday, September 15th at 5:30. Our Lenox walk will be Thursday, September 24th at 5:30. And our North Adams walk will be Thursday, October 1st at 5:30.
Great. And so what's the mixture then of funding sources that come in? Obviously, fundraising is an important part of it. I would imagine there are some state and federal grants. How does that mixture work, Divya?
So we rely on the state and federal funding for our core services. It helps us have our payroll in our staff and our core services. We do fundraising for the programs. You know, for example, Money School is totally funded from foundation grants and from the fundraising that we do. And it is such a core part of our work as well. So you know, it's you know, and I say this like literally so many times, because that is the reality. When you know, survivors come with varying needs, and when you're talking about rebuilding someone's life, and when someone who has to lose everything and they can't pay for housing or their car or their child care, you know, the scale of need is so vast. It takes a huge amount of resources to help services. And you know, the point that you yourself said, providing 24/7 services is not easy. You know, we have our shelter is 24/7. We have three shifts at our shelter, you know, so we have staff that is working, you know, 24 hours a day. And you know, those and in order to provide those services and be 24/7, we do need resources. So we have contracts with Department of Public Health. We have federal grants, you know, for Violence Against Women Act. We rely on foundations in the Berkshires. And reaching out to national foundations and regional foundations to see if they will support us. And they help us with, you know, specific grants like, for, let's say, Money School or other programming support groups that, you know, we can run. You know, we just finished a music therapy support group for kids that was funded by, you know, a cultural council grant.
So that's great support for the families, also, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So we are, you know, so the grants and foundations support some of the programming that allows us to do different things with survivors, and the state and federal is our core that helps support the staffing and our services. And then whatever we raise, our fundraising goes toward, you know, any gaps that we see, you know, we're providing food vouchers or, you know, telephones and safety cameras, providing a little bit of housing help. Someone who needs a $300 for their car, you know, our Money School graduates, we have a donor has a specific fund for our Money School graduates, especially around, you know, transportation, because that's so huge. If you can't take your car to your work, then, you know, how do you work and support yourself? So we do have these pockets of funding that allows us to offer support. We want to offer definitely much more. And as we get, sometimes we get additional funding from the state that will go towards survivors. We will immediately roll that out. So it's kind of a game of what we have, what kind of support we provide. But our priority is, of course, the services, you know, in terms of the counseling, the crisis intervention. We want to maintain that.
So much that goes on, and probably wanted to ask you, too, about the recent move of your central office, right? That's a pretty significant thing. Had been located on, I think, Francis Ave for many, many years, and recently moved to a new location. Tell us about that.
It's a beautiful historical building for those that haven't seen. It used to be the old fire station.
Yeah.
And it got converted into the offices. So we moved December of 2024 into our new offices. And the reason we had to move was because the need has increased in the county. And we are trying to keep pace with it.
Mm-hmm.
And in order for us to keep pace with the need and provide these, you know, comprehensive services, our staff had grown, our services has grown. Over the last, you know, decade, and we were literally bursting at the seams, as the previous executive director liked to say. So moving to a new office has been truly a game changer. You know, it has provided trauma-informed counseling rooms for, you know, survivors as they walk in. We have a, you know, very welcoming waiting area for them. We have an overflow waiting area for, because sometimes they have to stay with us for the whole day with their kids as we're trying to find emergency shelter or, you know, a safe place for them. So it gives us the space to do our, you know, to do our programming and services. And it gives space to survivors too when they walk in. So, you know, they're not like, you know, with, they can find a quiet place if they need to. The kids can, you know, have a space to play. And
they're not crammed into a little overcrowded room or, you know. Definitely.
And we have a big conference room. Yeah. Just want to say that, you know, it's so important for us as staff to get together and, you know, for the not only for the trainings, but as a team, because, you know, this work is hard and the staff also carry a lot of secondary trauma themselves, you know, when hearing these traumatic stories day in, day out. So it is very important for us to get together. So the building allows us. So, you know, I'm very grateful every single day when I walk into our beautiful building that we have the space to do everything we are doing.
Yeah. And you brought up a really good point, too. I think that that there is some sort of PTSD that comes from interfacing with this all the time. And that's something that your staff takes on and shoulders, I would imagine, right? It's probably a lot different than other jobs. And that's just something that, you know, maybe we didn't even talk about that very much of what it's like to bring in staff who are specialized in this field, who can really give the most help and also can shoulder that burden, that emotional burden that comes along with it.
Yes. You know, staff well-being is really very, very, very important to me and to all of us at EFC. And we try, you know, make sure that people are not getting burnt out, you know, providing them the support that they need. And, you know, they are truly inspiring.
Yeah.
They show up, you know, they take action, and they themselves are inspired by the courage of survivors. Mm. You know, it works both ways. When we see that courage in a survivor to take action, you know, however difficult it is, it motivates us, it inspires us, it, you know, it motivates us to show up the next day, every morning,
and,
you know, to show up for work.
Not a small number of people that are served in the community by the Elizabeth Freeman Center. It says right on your website, about 5,000 people served in a year, and that includes survivors, it includes families, and all the support that you provide. So pretty significant impact that this organization has. In the last minute or so we've got here on the air, let's mention the website and the hotline number again, and then Leslie, maybe give us the dates of the Rise Up walks.
Yeah, sure. If anyone is suffering from domestic violence or sexual assault, we have a 24-hour hotline. You can call. The number is 866-401-2425. We also have walk-in offices in Pittsfield, 66 Allen Street, North Adams at 61 Main Street, and Great Barrington, 168 Main Street. You could walk in between 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. Our website is elizabethfreemancenter.org, where you can get a lot more information, especially on our Rise Together walks that we're holding in September.
And the first one in Pittsfield is?
First one in Pittsfield is Tuesday, September 15th. The next one is Lenox, Thursday, September 24th. And then North Adams on Thursday, October 1st, all at 5:30 p.m.
And if you need reminders, you will see the lawn signs, I'm sure, going up fairly shortly. Divya and Leslie, I want to say thank you so much for being here, telling us all about the Elizabeth Freeman Center today on the program. It was great having you on. And we'll have you on again sometime to go in depth and more information about the organization. So thanks again.
Thank you so much for inviting us.
All right. All right, everybody. That's it for Morning Drive for the morning. And Brian Burkle will be back with you on Monday morning with the show. And we always appreciate you tuning in and listening or watching to the program. I always appreciate that. Our little community radio station here making an impact. So thanks again, everybody, for joining us. And we will see you again next week on Morning Drive. Take care, everybody.